Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008 for a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more. We'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The column is titled Holy Atheism, Batman: Why Superheroes Might Not Believe in God. It appears in the Washington Post. It says, in effect, when humans have superpowers, suspend your disbelief if you can for a moment. Think about the universes that are occupied by Superman and Batman and all of the other superheroes that fill our movie screens and used to be comic books, video games nowadays. When humans have superpowers, what do you need God's for? Joining us to respond to this column in the Washington Post, Pastor Hans Feeney, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He's creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Here's Your Updated Guide to Superhero and Supervillains' Religious Affiliations. Hans, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how do you respond to that basic notion and the assumptions behind it? That if, again, in the universe of superheroes, when humans have superpowers, we don't need gods.
Yeah, I would say it's a great example of the sort of slightly clever games that atheists like to play, where they create kind of a scenario where it's a heads I win, tails you lose kind of a situation. So basically, the atheist mindset here is that the reason people hunger for gods and the reason they hunger to believe in some kind of higher power is because there are things in this world that they can't explain. And because they can't explain things, they figure that there must be some sort of transcendent being above them that is sort of existing in this mystery sphere. And so the idea is basically that's kind of what we're looking for with God, is the idea that there's something kind of beyond us, but that if the thing that's beyond us comes near, then somehow that means that it's no longer God. So it's basically the trick is this, it's that if we can't explain something divine, it's not real. And if we can explain it, therefore it's not divine. So if God is transcendent, he's not real, because transcendent things are just our hopes and our dreams and our trying to make sense and to bring order to the universe. And if God is immanent, if he's near, if the mystery becomes manifest among us, then it therefore can't be God. So either way, they win the scenario. Either there is no God far above us, or the God who has come near to us by virtue of his nearness can't be God.
So what picture of God is there in this view? Just kind of someone who can solve your problems, someone who can right all wrongs or fight off evil? It seems a rather simplistic view of God's role in the universe.
Right, yeah. It seems that basically it's kind of taking the idea of superheroes as kind of types of God, which is certainly, I mean, there's certainly a lot of that history in comic book characters, you know, that Superman is basically a lot of times in the films, he's presented as kind of a Christ character. He was, I think, probably more accurately a Moses character, at least according to the guys who created him, the two Jewish guys who created him. And so that's certainly a common theme in comic books themselves and in comic book movies, is that there's a kind of a divine kind of character to these characters. But yeah, the idea is rather simplistic, and the article presents it as though the idea of God is just a being who's more powerful than you, who can do things that we can't normally do, who can vanquish enemies that you can't normally vanquish. And so if we as humans could come to possess those powers, then we could do everything for ourselves, and we wouldn't need to rely on some being that is more powerful than we are. So basically the idea is that if we can take on what are presumably divine features, that's the only reason that we would need God, and therefore we no longer have a use for him. It's a very kind of selfish and functional view of religion and of the idea of God, that he just simply exists to do the stuff that we can't do, and if once we gain the ability to do so, he can sort of, it's like he can move on like Mary Poppins or Pete's Dragon, you know, at the end of the movie when kind of the work he needed to do for those kids, when the work Mary Poppins or Pete's Dragon needed to do when is all finished, he can move on to somebody else.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're responding to a column in the Washington Post on the faith of superheroes titled Holy Atheism, Batman, Why Superheroes Might Not Believe in God. Pastor Feeney is senior contributor at The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled, Here's Your Updated Guide to Superheroes and Supervillains, Religious Affiliations. We'll talk a little bit more about the column on the other side of the break. Then Professor Stephen Parks will join us in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. for Part 11 of our series, Responding Roman Catholic Proof Text. We'll talk about the Ethiopian eunuch and the perspicuity of Scripture.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama. Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina. Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa. Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. And Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues, Etc. 300.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're responding to a column in the Washington Post on the faith of superheroes. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. The Issues, Etc., book of the month for August, will kind of lay out for even the youngest of its readers and its users the real picture of God. We're talking here about a distorted view of God that atheism often builds its arguments on. But the real view of God is found very clearly taught in Scripture and very clearly explained in the Issues, Etc. book of the month for August. It's simply Luther's small catechism. It contains those parts of the catechism, the Ten Commandments, the Lord's Prayer, the Apostles' Creed, baptism, absolution, and the Lord's Supper. After reading this book, even the youngest listener will have a grasp of who the true God is and what he really is, how he has revealed himself in the person and work of Jesus Christ. I can say without any qualification that Luther's Small Catechism is Christ-centered and cross-focused. Find out more about this visual edition, made visual for your learning pleasure and your learning ease by Concordia Publishing House at our website, issuesetc.org. You can see it on every page, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Issues, Etc., book of the month for August, Luther's Small Catechism, visual edition. Pastor Feeney, one of the things that I think the column in the Washington Post brings up is how superheroes are given the qualities they are, sometimes including their religious faith or little scraps of it that they retain, to make them more relatable to ordinary human beings like us. What do you make of that particular observation?
Yeah, I think it's the sort of typical atheist approach where it begs the question concerning the nature of religion and just simply assumes that it is a crutch for sort of weak-minded people, and that it's something that the wise and that the truly learned, those who kind of have the true gnosis, transcend above. And these are the things you kind of hear oftentimes just when people talk about why they don't believe, and they'll say, well, religion's not really for me. It may be for you, but it's not for me, which is a fancy way of saying, I don't need it. I'm wise enough, and I'm sort of a strong enough person to not have to fabricate some sense of meaning to the universe. But, you know, weak-minded people like you, you need to believe that there's some reason for everything. And I think there's a little bit of that in this article, with kind of basically the idea that the way that you make characters relatable is by giving them the same kind of idiosyncrasies and personality quirks that we all have, and treating religion as one of those. It's a way for us to be able to kind of identify with people who share this same kind of need to make sense out of the universe. So even if these are people who are far above us and far more strong and powerful and oftentimes far more brilliant, that the way that you make them relatable is, it's almost like the religious version of, you know, if you're writing a romantic comedy, you know, and you've got a lady on screen who's much more beautiful than the average woman who's watching, so you got to do something to make her a bit more relatable, you know, so you make her kind of klutzy and she pratfalls all the time, or kind of things of that nature.
There's a parallel drawn in the column between ancient Greek and Norse mythology. Now, they call it mythology, but we need to remember that for the Greeks and for the Norse and other ancient peoples, it was also their religion in the fullest sense. It was their religion and their politics in the fullest sense of the word. But the parallels drawn there between those ancient religions and the mythologies of superheroes, our modern or postmodern mythologies of superheroes. What do you make of the parallel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a terribly unfair comparison to draw, that every society is drawn to stories of heroes and trying to understand who they are based off of the kind of the stories that have been passed down. And I think certainly as Christians, we can look at things and we can say, well, you know, if you look at the various, in particular, the ancient religions of the world that are built on these mythological characters, that what you had was you had people who were trying to wrestle with who they are, with sort of a fragmented understanding of God, with bits and pieces of him that they had picked up through nature. But apart from revelation, they couldn't see clearly who he was. And so their myths were their attempts to basically create, to kind of manifest their understanding of God, and their understanding of right and wrong, and their understanding of who they were in the universe. And that functions a lot of times the way that fiction functions, and certainly the way that comic books function, is that you have people creating stories to try and express what it is that they think is right and wrong with the universe, what it is that they think are strong characteristics in people, what they think power and justice are, and things of this nature. But obviously the difference between all of those things and Christianity is the revelation of God in Jesus Christ, and that when Christ comes into the flesh and he proclaims that he is the Son of God, who's going to prove his divinity by rising from the dead, and does exactly that, and when he points to the testimony of the apostles and the prophets as a pure and true revelation of who God is, that shows us that we're dealing with something far different than people trying to make sense of the world around them, either by clinging to the myths that they've heard or creating new ones, but rather that you're dealing with God very clearly revealing who he is to you through the person of his Son.
Okay, I'm curious about one of the things that I think the column delves into in a sidelong way, and that is the problem of evil. It deals with kind of lumping in Christian ideas with other, they would say, other mythologies to explain why bad things happen to people who are otherwise just minding their own business, portraying the average Joe as kind of a victim of divine caprice or satanic right. caprice, as the case may be. Is this the way that Christianity would have us understand evil in the world?
No, of course not. Yeah, Christianity makes quite clear that evil is not merely something that afflicts us and that sort of descends upon us like some alien force. I mean, there are certainly times when evil things happen to people and there's no sort of clear corresponding sin showing that they brought this upon themselves. And barring a word from God explicitly saying this is divine punishment, we obviously can't make that leap and try to piece together two things that God hasn't pieced together. That being said, the Bible does make very clear that all men are conceived and born in sin, that we're born as enemies of God, that we are not simply victims of evil, but we are the perpetrators of evil. And that the reason that we ultimately need the hero above all heroes, Jesus Christ, is because he's the only one who's not corrupted by this world around us, who's not torn away from his mission, who doesn't in some measure fail to carry it out perfectly. But by virtue of the fact that Jesus is divine, and by virtue of the fact that he's born of a virgin and doesn't inherit a sinful nature, he comes into this world to be the pure and perfect hero who vanquishes sin and death and the devil, the greatest enemies of all. And he does this not through feats of physical strength, but through meekness and weakness, and by laying his life down upon the cross, and by being betrayed and crucified and put to death in order to make us his own, in order to rescue us and redeem us out of the hands of the devil.
It is interesting when you mention that, that even in the comic book universes, we often, surprisingly often, find the stories hinging around self-sacrifice of the hero.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very common theme. It seemed like when The Dark Knight Rises came out, it seemed like Christopher Nolan was really going to have the guts to kill off Batman there at the end and have this final act of sacrifice for the sake of the people of Gotham that he was laying his life down for. And then he didn't quite have the guts to pull the trigger. There was the ending there where it turned out that he had survived, which is, you know, I suppose, more fun that way. And it left, you know, room open for the possibility of a sequel, if ever that was going to be the case. But yeah, that's a very common theme. I expect that that's probably going to play a big role in the next Avengers movie, in large part because I think a good number of the original cast members are finishing up their contracts. So if they're not going to re-sign, then that's a great opportunity to have them sacrifice themselves for the sake of the greater good. So yeah, that certainly is a very common theme. But obviously, the big difference is that when a superhero lays his life down for people, he's only able to physically save those within kind of the proximity of the danger, whereas Christ obviously is able to eternally save and save both the bodies and the souls of everyone who has ever lived and everyone through faith who receives him.
On the subject of death, it's a common, it didn't used to be, but it becomes a common theme in the darker versions of the comic book world that we have here. You mentioned the Avengers movie where at the end a good portion of the entire universe's population is simply with a finger snap erased from existence. They die. And everyone's expectation, Pastor Feeney, is that at least some of them are going to come back. This is going to be reversed. What do you make of that view of death, that even death can be reversed in a superhero universe?
Yeah, I think it's a great example of how it is that people struggle to understand what death is, and that apart from knowing Christ, it's very difficult to kind of get your head around that. And the way that death kind of, it's probably a bit of an accident that comic books have embraced somewhat of a Christian view of death, because both of them have essentially kind of taken the view that death is not so much an inevitability that we just have to sit back and accept. But death is something, death is an enemy to be conquered. It's a challenge to rise above. And obviously in the Christian faith, that's because Christ has come to conquer death. He's come to render it powerless, to take the fangs out of the mouth of the serpent and render it incapable of harming us. I think in comic books, it's more so that you need to sell more comic books. So sometimes you run out of ideas, so it's sort of a great trick where you just kill off a character for a while, and then you wait and kind of recharge, and then you find another way to bring him back, or you set him in another universe, or things of that nature. So it's a great way of showing how it is that death can be conquered, although I'm not necessarily certain that from the comic book perspective, it's coming from the purest of theological places as much as it is just don't permanently kill your cash cows.
There's a rather stunning, and I know that this is partly written tongue-in-cheek in the Washington Post, but obviously not entirely, a stunning conclusion to this column that I want your reaction to at some length, Pastor Feeney. It reads this way: what's God for when you can flick a switch and bring your pal back from his not-so-final rest? Spiritual beliefs are superfluous when you are so talented and smart and powerful that you can overcome any obstacle and succeed at any quest. Superheroes live in a world where human beings can do anything, put on tights, and we can all hobnob with Zeus and kick Yahweh's butt. We control our own destinies, muscle planets around, about, and overcome death itself. Humans are all powerful. That's the myth, of course, but it's a myth even atheists like Batman can believe in. What do you make of that particular conclusion?
It's a very telling conclusion. And the reality is that there's no such thing as a true atheist. Everyone has some sort of God. Some people worship the true God. Some people worship idols. And for some people, the idol that they worship is ultimately themselves. And very often what you find amongst atheists, especially those who are kind of the sort of the more elitist type crowd, the ones who are atheists more so out of pride and arrogance rather than, I suppose, out of pain, what you oftentimes get there is that I don't need God because I have my superior wisdom and insight and my greater understanding of the world. And what it really seeks to show is that for many atheists, they're insisting that they don't believe in God so they can place themselves on his throne. And that last paragraph, I think, does a really great example of showing that if only we can make ourselves strong enough and powerful enough and immortal enough, if we can exercise power over the things in life that normally have caused people to cry out for God and they cry out for us instead, then we finally get to assume the throne of God and to sit on the throne of God. So in the end, it's not really atheism at all, but it's me-theism.
The irony of that conclusion is if you read this carefully, it actually sounds more like the proclamations of a super villain rather than a superhero.
Right. Yeah, it really does. It reads very much like the one of the things that superhero movies always do is and the Incredibles has a great joke about this where the bad guy with the red hair and the rocket boots, whose name is eluding me right now, Syndrome, where Syndrome says he's going off about his plan and Mr. Incredible almost knocks him out with a rock or something, and he says, "Oh, you've caught me monologuing," and sort of making fun of the trope that you always have in these things, where the villain is explaining his dastardly plans to the hero for some reason instead of just killing the hero. And so, of course, the hero always ends up escaping and foiling the plan that he only knew about because the bad guy told him about it. Yeah, and that's very, very much what it sounds like. It just sounds like a monologue from Magneto or Lex Luthor or, you know, any of the kind of the major villains in comic book lore.
Finally, you're the father of young boys. I'm sure that they're fascinated by all the lore of various superheroes. If one of your boys asked you, what's the difference between, say, Captain America or Superman and Jesus, how would you respond to him?
Well, the first thing I would say is that Jesus is real, and the other ones aren't. So the comic book characters are figments of people's imagination who are trying to imagine a world where people would have power over the frightening and terrifying things of this world. And Jesus, we don't have to imagine because he's real. He came into the flesh. His apostles saw him and knew him and witnessed him rising from the dead. And kind of like I'd said before, while in our imagination, Superman might be able to save us from death and Spider-Man might be able to rescue us from the bad guys, Jesus is the only one who can save both our bodies and our souls forever, and he's done exactly that.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He is creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled Here's Your Updated Guide on Superhero and Supervillains' Religious Affiliations. You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the remainder of the program and after this break, we're going to continue with part 11 of our series responding to Roman Catholic proof text. Today, an argument is made often by Roman Catholic apologists that Scripture is inscrutable, or mostly. It is obscure, or at least mostly so. And because of this, we need an infallible magisterium to explain it to us and to rightly interpret it. Now, there's a kernel of truth, perhaps, in that argument. One of the Bible passages they bring forth to make that argument is the famous story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Poor eunuch can't understand what he's reading. Philip explains it to him. That, they say, proves the need for the infallible magisterium. Professor Stephen Parks will respond to that argument after this. You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things: the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us: broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.